Welcome to BizRocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for BizRocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Good morning and welcome to BizRocket Radio. This is a show where we get a chance to interview and learn from executives and business owners here in the Atlanta area. This morning, we're going to be talking a good bit about personal branding in a couple of different areas, marketing to a certain degree, and then also the look, which we're definitely looking forward to. Our first guest is Sue Otten, and Sue is a marketing and communications leader here in the Atlanta area. Wide background of working with several different organizations in the marketing area, and we want to welcome in Sue.
Thank you very much, John.
So, Sue, maybe you could give us a little bit of background on how you got here and what you're doing now.
Well, I have what I think is a pretty colorful past. I started with Apple Computer and did 15 years there, really learned from the marketing genius that we have with Apple. And then I consulted for 8 years, like all good Apple employees that are very entrepreneurial in spirit, when often consulted. And that gave me a wonderful opportunity to work with a huge breadth of different kinds of companies and industries. And then found myself here in Atlanta. And because I grew up on a farm, I went to work for AGCO as their director of corporate marketing and brand communications worldwide. And that was a great fit between my marketing background and kind of my passion with agriculture.
So, and the experience that you had with Apple, and we've talked about this in the past, mm-hmm. Seemed to shape a lot of kind of how you do business and what you do. What do you see as parallels between what Apple has done and what you implement in some of the mm-hmm. marketing and what you do for people?
Well, Apple is a master at like being able to read the market and have great vision and really know what a market wants before they even know what they want. They're also perfect at execution of the interface. I mean, starting with first Mac computer to an iPhone, and I think their design point is an 18-month-old. If a baby can't use it, it's too hard. And, you know, the fact that you need training or to implement technology, you know, hire a consultant, that's not the design point. You really want to create programs and execute marketing so that it's very clear, very consistent, and very easy for your target audience to understand your message.
So when you're going in and doing marketing with organizations, how are you bringing that in? Are you following that same kind of rule of thumb?
I try to, and a lot of it is driven by the culture of the company. So if they're embracing technology and are able to have clarity of their message and use technology to bring that message to their target audience with whatever channel that audience likes to use, whether it be social media or digital or print or face-to-face relationship marketing, whatever the target audience dictates, that's what a company has to respond to. But you have to respond with very clear messages. And it's really not about me, my product. It's about you and what we can do for you. So benefit, benefit, benefit.
One of the slogans that I've seen you have on some business cards is making marketing magic. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could explain a little bit more about what that is.
Well, it's kind of a double entendre. I mean, sometimes there's mystery around marketing. I mean, is it a science? Is it an art? I really think it's the blend. And you need to do marketing so that it is magic. It's not really a mystery. You need to understand your audience. You need to understand your product. And you need to bring the two together. I think real estate agents are the best example of that. They have listings. They have buyers. They bring the two together. They're very clear about what their customers want and what they have. and they just bring the two together. And that's, I think, a perfect example of excellent marketing is be able to bring the two together. So marketing has to be elegant, simple, direct, a little bit of mystery behind it, but it really speaks to the audience. And if you ever seen a magic show, that really speaks to you and it gets you excited. And, you know, you buy based on emotional appeal. You know, you look at the facts of the product, but really it's an emotional purchase with anything that you buy.
How important is the time to marketing? For example, mm-hmm. if you're marketing in the 80s or the mm-hmm. 90s or even the 2000s versus now in the 2012, are there rules and regs that pretty much are standby? And how much flavor do you add based on the time that you're in?
I think, again, it's your market that dictates that. And you have to look at your competition because just like you want to stand out personally and have a great personal brand, you want your company to have a great reputation and a great brand, and you want your product to be recognized by your target market. You don't want to, you know, if your company has the culture that you're a follower, then timing isn't that important. But if you want the reputation of being a leader, first to market, innovative, then you're going to have a different time frame than someone who's a follower.
You talk about branding, and that's also something that I've seen you've kind of, I don't know if you've morphed into it or if mm-hmm. it's something you've really kind of sunk your teeth into. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about what your thoughts are on branding and how mm-hmm. important it is to have your own brand.
Well, I think it comes from my B2B experience with a lot of branding, and you really have to have clarity of a product portfolio. You need to have segment your market, and you need to really have a really clear message. You need to be consistent. You need to know your customer. So really, it's the three C's. And that applies personally, too. You need to know who you are. You have to have really clarity with your message. You need to know that you're competent, how you compare against the competition. So if you have strengths that are outstanding, man, you better leverage those. You have to build your brand around those. And then you really need to know your target customer. So if you're looking for a job, your target customer is going to be different than if you have a job. So if you're seeking, you need to know who your hiring manager is going to be and what their attributes are. If you're in a company, you still have a customer. It's your boss. It's the CEO. It's the customers you serve in your market, but you need to identify those customers and be able to be very clear about your message and how your competency can help them. It's all about helping them. And in the process, they will begin to really understand you and understand your brand.
Mm. So that's branding for an individual. Mm-hmm. So somebody needs to be branded. Mm-hmm. What about products or companies mm-hmm. as their own entity? Is there a difference, really?
I would say the principles are the same. So these three C's, you know, clarity, competency, and customer can apply whether it's a person, a company, a product. If you take those three principles and really understand what you're trying to brand, the person, the company, or the product, and apply those three principles to them, I think you're making great progress toward having a really strong brand.
From your experience in corporate America and mm-hmm. doing branding and doing the marketing piece, what are some of the big mistakes that you found companies making?
I think across the board, the biggest mistake in branding is to try to be all things to all people. Branding is as much who you're not as who you are. And you need to be razor sharp focused on that. People are intelligent and they can make the transference. If you're a dog whisperer, and they need a horse whisperer, they can make that transference. But to say, hey, I'm good with animals, you're what? You know, but, okay, whisperer works because there's a brand around that, and
right.
I get that.
Right.
They're clear, they know their target audience, and if you can leverage a brand that exists, that's great, except you're kind of being a copycat, so I don't know how good that
right,
is. But,
right.
But, you know, you still have clarity of message there. And you really have to define yourself based on your attributes, your competencies, but if people don't understand those and you're not making it very clear for them, or you're not speaking in their language or the way they like to receive information, for example, social media is a huge way to build your brand these days. If you have a target audience, a customer that uses social media, if you're trying to sell your product to an audience that is not digital, is not in that space, is not engaged or conversational, you're probably not going to be very successful. But social media is the radio of, you know, this generation, this time, and if you're not figuring out how to use it for your business, B2B, as well as B2C or B2B2C, mm-hmm. you're missing the boat. You know, people say, well, social media, is that really for me, for my customer? The average social network user is 37. I think 37 is a pretty good target audience to have, at least for my brand, for the brands that I worked with. If my audience isn't in the social space, they're probably kicking around, or maybe they're influenced by people that are. So it's still a good space to be into. And I believe that it's a valuable tool, and that's all it is a tool. You know, when radio first came out, did people say, gee, I wonder if we should do a radio show? You know, when the internet came out, gee, you think we ought to have a website? I don't know. Let's wait and think on that. You know, let's wait and see if websites are really good. Who doesn't have a website these days? I mean, it's the same with social media. It's going to be, who doesn't have a blog? You don't have a blog? Where's your Facebook page? I can't find you on LinkedIn.
Right.
I mean, it's all about branding. And if you're not out there, people can't find you.
What are your, I was at a conference just last week, and they were talking about apps and how apps are going to take over websites. You know, if you don't have an app, it's like not having a website exactly. right now. What are your thoughts
yeah.
on that?
I just met with someone yesterday who does mobile apps. And I think social media is already usurping websites. How many websites are out there that are done on WordPress, which is the blogging platform? And that's where we're at right now. And I agree with you. I think mobile apps are going to be there because, I mean, unless a website or a social media site is optimized for mobile, you're kind of handicapped. I mean, we all got our smartphones in our pocket. You know, you're taking notes on yours here now. I mean,
right.
it is the way we work.
And I'm almost a little embarrassed because you're the Apple expert and I can barely make a note on mine.
No. I mean, but the thing is, you can because it's easy and it's got a great interface. So I think mobile apps are really the way it's going to be. But again, they're in that infancy. If you think back when desktop publishing first started, remember those really, really ugly newsletters that everybody did? And they had 14 different fonts and 7 different colors because
right.
you could do it?
Yeah.
Just because you can do social media or you can do a mobile app doesn't mean maybe you should be doing it. Hire professionals. I mean, you don't want to be out there and looking ugly. If you're
right.
out there, you want to be professional and you want to look good.
Well, again, that goes back to your brand, right?
Absolutely.
If you're going to put something out, especially in the social media market that you have mm-hmm. now where somebody could pick it up, the worst thing you want to do is be successful with the wrong message.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, just because everybody can be a publisher, you can put your opinion out there. There's a lot of really bad writing out there, too.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, you talk about the communication side of things. What are some of the common mistakes that you see people making with social media these days?
Well, my favorite social media mistake, if there can be a favorite mistake, that's kind of an oxymoron, but is that they try to be in the social space, and then they're not social.
Right.
Okay, it's like moving into the neighborhood. Hi, I'm here. Nice to meet you. And then all of a sudden, you notice that the house is dark, and it looks like they've moved out, but they didn't say anything. That's what putting a social media page up is, and not being engaged with your customer. And the timing is different, but you can set the tone of the timing. Twitter, oh my gosh, it's rapid. It's like rapid fire. If you're not in Twitter, like every half hour, you're old, you're slow.
Yeah.
Blogs, you can set the tone. You can blog once a month, once a day, once an hour. You set the tone. You can also set the tone in Twitter. We don't do tech support on Twitter. We don't answer customer questions. Or we do. But you decide what you're going to do, and then you have to be consistent. So I think the biggest mistake is going out there and not clarifying what you're doing and how social you are. And then if you've established that and you're not consistent with that, then you've totally confused your market. Then you don't know what to expect.
So if you're going into a new company, somebody brings you in as either a consultant or an employee, what's the first thing that you do in getting a handle on what does the message need to be?
I think in the first 30 days, you have to listen. You know, they say God gave you 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason, and I think that's the best practice to put into place when you're new to a situation. Now, some companies don't want to wait 30 days, but if you're going to develop a strategy and put budget, time, and people behind something and money,
right.
you better know what you're doing. I think you really need to just shut up and listen.
Right.
And that means that's like a 360 review if you've done any of those in the corporate world. You got to listen to the employees, to the bosses, to the customers, Did I say to the customers?
I think it's twice.
Okay. And then, and to your distribution too. You know, are you retail? Are you a distributor? Do you have dealers? Are you B2B to C? Are you B2C? So you really have to listen to all these points of light that are out there. Take all that information and then make a decision. And that's the one thing I really learned at Apple. Just make a decision and go. Why are we futzing around strategizing and having committee meeting after committee meeting about it? Just go.
Yeah.
You learn more by doing. Yep. And you know what? If you messed up, and if you're afraid of messing up, then start small. Do a test. Do a segmented market test. Do something little. Do something that's easy, fast, cheap. You know, do it at a trade show. Do it at a dealer event. But do something. Get out there and do something and start. I really pushed AGCO at the beginning to get into social media. Oh, I don't know if we can do social media. I don't know. We don't want a bunch of kids talking about our products. You know what? They're talking about them anyway. You might as well be out there and join that conversation. Mm-hmm. And let's start and get into social media ahead of the competition. While maybe the market is small, maybe there's not that many people out there. But guess what? We can be a leader in this space. We can set the tone. We can learn a whole lot while there's not a whole bunch of people in the space. So if we make a mistake, and you will make mistakes, you're not doing it in front of tens of thousands of people. You're doing it in front of a couple hundred. I'd rather make a mistake like that and learn from that and continue to grow the effort so that when you do have tens of thousands or 60 or 70,000 people on AGCO's Facebook page these days, you're saying something that's intelligent and relevant and responsive rather than making those mistakes in front of a really big audience.
So one of the things that we had talked about before was integrated marketing, and mm-hmm. the integrated marketing concept, I would imagine every one of those pieces kind of plays into that role.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's back to those three C's. You have that clarity of message, figuring out what you are, and then being consistent in delivering that across the board. So that message better be able to be found everywhere the same. Now, you might do it a little bit differently in Twitter, of course, with hashtags than you do in a blog where you can write ad nauseum about something, and Facebook's kind of in the middle. Your corporate website's going to have a different tone than your Facebook page, but the message, the core message, is the same. The strategy's the same. The product's the same. The way you deliver it is different, and your tone might be a little bit different, but it's still a consistent message. And in because people, especially for companies that have big and widespread target audiences, or they want to grow their audience, you better have that message everywhere. So if you're going to talk about something in a blog, you better tweet that. You better push it to your Facebook page. You better have a feed on your corporate website so they can find it easily. You know, you don't want people saying, oh, I heard about this, but I can't find it anywhere. I can only find it in the industry chat rooms, and the company isn't saying anything. They're not weighing in on this.
Right.
That's really bad.
Yep.
That would probably be my second favorite mistake.
So the whole Apple experience and going mm-hmm. back to making it easy for an 18-month-old mm-hmm. kind of goes to the same thing. If you mm-hmm. can't find it, especially nowadays, attention span is like zero.
Yeah.
If I can't click on it and go right to it, if mm-hmm. I've got to download something new, mm-hmm. man, forget it. It's yeah. not going to happen.
And people are writing in a different way. They're absorbing information in a different way. And there's lots of discussions about that we're raising a generation of fragmented brains that can't have strategic thought because it's chopped up in 140 characters at a
right.
time. And I think there's a lot to that. I mean, I think there are times where it's good to unplug, but your whole target audience isn't going to unplug at the same time, so you have to be out there. But you can't be noisy. You have to be succinct
right.
and clear. Again, back to that clarity, that first C. You have to be able to be really focused on being relevant and cutting that back and being able to write really tight. So, you know that saying that says, if I had more time, I would have wrote a shorter letter? You need right. to take the time and write short. It doesn't mean it has to always be 140 characters, but it has to be succinct. And if people want to read more, man, give them a link.
Right.
You know,
right. A little introduction, a little nugget, and then yeah. here's where you can find out more
Absolutely.
Information.
Absolutely. That's a perfect format.
Yeah. And the technology now allows you to do that mm-hmm. so well.
Yeah.
Video or Word, or there's so many ways that you can do
I'm
that.
I'm glad you brought up video because that is so powerful. But again, short. Less than a minute 30 probably is
right,
best.
Right.
You lose your attention after like the first 7 seconds of a video. So if you don't compel them at the very beginning, that's why our formula really was a really compelling title, you know, to draw them in, a little bit of explanation, a little bit of content, right. and then a call to interaction, because social is about interacting. And you want your customers and fans to weigh in, and so because people actually are going to believe them a lot more than they're going to believe you. And that's why social media is so great, because you can foster that conversation. You can encourage that conversation. You can set people right and give them the facts, you know, if there's something that's a crisis or if there's misinformation out there. But you can do it in a way that's not screaming in your face. And it's not corporate, like on the corporate website or on the press release, you know.
It's interesting you mentioned the title and then the nugget of information mm-hmm. and then a kind of a call to action. And we go back to there's some things that don't really change. That's an outline for gaining people's attention in newspaper ads for 20 years.
Yeah, right. And, you know, it's just a different format. It's just a different channel of communication. That's all.
Yeah.
So maybe can you share with us real quick? I'm just curious. Who is a good target for the services that you offer? I mean, you've provided tons of good information here, but who's really the recipient for you?
I think the best answer to that would be any company that wants to speak more clearly to their audience. I mean, if they're happy with the size of their market, the size of their revenue, and they don't want to grow, well, if you're not growing, you're going to be shrinking. So it's really everybody. And I think because of my consulting and, you know, I worked in technology, I worked in manufacturing, you know, agriculture, I think I really am able to serve a really broad audience too. And people will disagree, and this might go back to, you know, clarity or focus, razor focus, but I think really a good marketer is able to understand the product or service or technology and then be able to apply that to the target audience. So it's really more about the discipline of marketing and then applying the industry or the product to it. Now, there's exceptions to that, I think, because there's industries that are heavily regulated. And if you don't have experience in those really regulated industries, I think you would be at a disadvantage. But, you know, again, that's stuff that can be learned. And one of my best friends at AGCO was the legal department, because they're the ones that really set the tone for what you can say and what you can't say. Yeah. So if you know, if the marketing department isn't best friends with legal, then they're working the wrong way. You don't want to be adversaries. You want to embrace them and figure out how you can work together and help the message be... I mean, you don't want to give the lawyers business. You want to be their best friend. So to prevent them getting business, you have to talk to them a lot and understand. And, you know, once you have that relationship built and you understand it, then you can really move a lot more quickly. You don't have to go to the attorneys to get every bloody thing approved. At least I didn't, because we had a strong enough relationship, and I got it. I knew what we needed to do and not do. So I think any company needs the services that I offer. Either there's a lot of companies out there that, especially take social media for an example. Okay, there's marketing strategy, and then there's marketing implementation. And maybe it's because I grew up on a farm. I know how to implement. I know how to shovel hay and stuff like that. But you have to have a strategy. And I'm also inherently cheap, I think, because I grew up on the farm. You know, and I leverage things like interns and college student, you know, marketing wannabes, and, you know, because they're dying to get great experience and build out their resume, because it's a tough market out there. But what's lacking, especially in the social media space, is the strategy. And really, it's not a social media strategy. It's a marketing and communication strategy. And so I think a company that thinks that they can do it by hiring a recent college grad that knows how to tweet their thumbs off, that's not strategy. That's implementation. And you need that. And you need to be good at that. And you need to have a lot of rapid fire implementation. But you have to have a strategy that's consistent with your goals. And I think that calls for business experience to be able to, you know, understand the goals of the company and figure out your product and your target audience and be able to pull the two together or three together. I'm not big at math.
So great stuff. And let me wrap up with one last question, and that is a pearl of wisdom. Do you have something that you'd say to our listeners that would kind of encapsulate what your thoughts are in the marketing?
Make marketing magic. And if you don't know how to do that, give me a call.
Give her a call.
Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to get in contact with you, Sue, what's the best way to reach you?
Probably the best way is my email address, and it's real simple. It's Otten Sue. That's Otten, not rotten. Otten, Otten Sue @gmail.com. Or I'm on LinkedIn as Sue Otten, so you should be able to find me. Just Google me. I pop up.
All right. You should be everywhere, right?
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for your time, and maybe we'll catch up in a second.
Yeah.
There's a couple of questions I might have time to bring in both you guys on. Our next guest is Mark Fonseca. I get that?
Yes,
you all are. Right. And Mark is a professional clothier, and he's looking sharp and dapper as all. Mm-hmm. He's got the hanky in the pocket and the nice shirt. I never would have picked out that because I'm pretty, like I said, I was talking to Andy earlier, I'm kind of colorblind, which is not a good thing.
Then you need my dressing by the numbers.
There you go. Granimals. I am a big granimal kind of guy. I'm it's like white and white and then blue and gray, and it works. Well, it may not work, but at least it looks... Doesn't embarrass you.
Yeah, but he's putting all kinds of style together, and we got stripes and patterns.
I wouldn't be bold enough to wear that.
Yeah,
no
I'm a solid kind of guy.
Yeah, I'd look at that and I'd be like, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to walk out and people are going to go, what in the blue blazes? So we need Mark. Yeah. So Mark, tell us a little bit about your background and your company.
My background, I'm married. I've got a beautiful wife and a daughter and a son. Live in East Cobb. I've been in the clothing business since 1993. And I've been a subject matter expert with regard to executive image and professional attire for the past 10 years. I was the wardrobe consultant for CNN and Turner Broadcasting for several years as well.
So were you dressing the guys that were on the TV?
Yeah, the guys you were watching the news or the sports, I was responsible for their wardrobe.
Okay, so how many times did they try to go on air with something that was just god-awful, did not work at all? Because I've seen those clothes, and maybe you weren't there.
Yeah, I wasn't there then. Whenever you saw the look that didn't work, that wasn't me. I was very particular about when they went on the air. A lot of them used my Dressing by the Numbers program, so they couldn't make a mistake.
All right, so I gotta go. I was going to save that question for later, but you brought it up twice, and now I'm intrigued. Tell us about this Dressing by the Numbers.
Basically, Dressing by the Numbers is granimals for guys. It takes all the guesswork out of dressing well.
Yep.
And so what I do is I'll number, for example, that sport coat that you're wearing.
Right.
That would be a number one.
Okay.
And then you may have three or four shirts that go with that jacket. There would be a number one in there as well.
Okay.
And then you may have three or four pairs of trousers that go with that jacket and shirts. Those would have number ones.
Okay.
So all you do is as long as it has a number one, you match all the numbers up and you look like a rock star every day.
Nice. Nice. See, I'm all about that. Now, the problem that I typically have is ties. Because now, that's a lot of solids is easy with a tie. You can almost do anything in a white shirt. That's
but I love your tie today.
Do you like that?
Yeah.
It's very restricting. So
it's the natural look.
It's the natural. Right. It's so natural. So you do that with the ties as well?
I do that with the ties as well, exactly. And then I'll put a little BL or BR so you know to wear it with black or brown shoes.
Nice. Yeah, nice.
Works great.
How about the socks? What's the general rule of someone thought? It's got to be darker than the pants?
Exactly right, John. It is the rule of men's hosiery is it needs to be the same color or darker, but normally darker than the pant leg. The shoe doesn't drive the color of the sock. It's the pant leg. So it's darker than the pant leg.
Darker than the pant leg.
Right.
I have had things sometimes when I've been in meetings and, you know, you cross your legs and you think, yeah, that's popping. There was a guy with a black suit. There's no one listening out there, is there, Andy?
No, they can't hear us out there.
Guy with a black suit, black shirt, black... White socks.
No.
Wow.
I mean, like, bam, white. Yeah. So that you would probably, that would not be in your numbers.
Yeah, that wouldn't work for my clients.
So how did you get into this? I mean, is this something that were you always the guy that dressed sharp in high school and college? Or
well, I've wanted to do this since I was 15, and I really am living my dream. My grandfather was one of the biggest influences on me. I remember watching him get ready in the morning. It was just a ritual to see him do the cufflinks, the pocket square, the hat. I mean, he would get dressed to walk to the grocery store in the morning.
Right.
And he always told me, Mark, be careful what you wear because it tells the world what you think of yourself. And I never forgot that.
Nice.
Well, now that's a great point. Let me ask a question off of that, though. Are we seeing a change in that? I mean, we know as the tech culture emerged, mm-hmm. we saw a lot of things in corporate America as far as dress codes start to really shift. But is there still kind of a main safety line for dressing etiquette?
There is. You're seeing a little shift back to business attire, but still the business casual has been refined. For example, what John's wearing and what I'm wearing today, a lot of executives have a big conundrum. They know how to do a suit and tie, you know, navy suit, white shirt, red tie, but they have a very difficult time looking like a business leader and doing the business casual or the business appropriate with a sport jacket, nice pair of casual trousers, and some loafers. And in that environment, everything focuses around the shirt. The shirt plays center stage. So if you don't have your jacket on and mm-hmm. you're in the office, you mm-hmm. still look great. Well, then you're going to see a client. You put your jacket on. you have your pocket square, and that takes the place of your tie, and you look fantastic. You can walk anywhere in the city and look great.
Pocket square takes the place of a tie. I like that idea.
It does.
Because then you don't get choked. At summertime, it gets hot, and it's
right.
It's rough.
Right, it is, especially in Atlanta.
Let me throw one more curveball in here. Does physique play any role in this?
It has a huge role. The two pillars of dressing well, the first is color. The biggest mistake I see guys making is that a lot of guys just aren't wearing the colors that are in their wheelhouse. Whether you've got brown hair or brown eyes or brown hair and blue eyes, and then proportion. Whether you're 6'3 or 5'6, you're not going to wear the same thing. A lot of people don't know is once you go over 6 foot, the cuffs on your trousers, if you're wearing them, go automatically to 2 inches from an inch and a half. A lot of people don't know that. If you're 5'6", you're wearing an inch and a half cuff, and proportion plays a big role in dressing well. It's actually the second pillar, and color would be the first. The whole point of dressing well is to lead the viewer's eye towards your face. When I was the wardrobe consultant for Turner Broadcasting and CNN, they said, Mark, the reason that we hired you is because we know that you're an expert in color, and we want everybody focused on the message, the news. We don't want them distracted by their pocket square or their tie or their earrings. So the whole point of dressing is to lead the viewer's eye towards your face so they're focused on the message that you're sending, not what you're wearing.
So when you're trying to create a personal brand from your dress, how do you identify what that brand is going to be, and then how do you back that up? How do you do it on a regular basis so that when you're going to the grocery store, and you run into somebody that's a potential prospect or client or somebody that's important, it doesn't throw them off?
Well, the first thing you have to understand, is who you are. What message do I want to send? You need to be intentional about sending that message. And most guys live in the world of they don't know what they don't know. Growing up, they were, dressed by their mothers. Then they had a girlfriend, right? They were dressed by them. Then you get married, and you're dressed by your wife. So you're being dressed by women most of your life. And you really don't know how to dress for business. There's certain rules that you follow for dressing for business. And when it comes to brand, color is really everything. Making sure you're wearing the right colors and proportion, and then also making sure that your image is consistent with the profession that you have as well.
Yeah, and the profession thing is always interesting because, as Andy was saying, it kind of shifts a little bit. 10 years ago or so, it was, casual almost every day. It was, you could go in and you could be in jeans almost and in a lot of different places and no ties and not a lot of suits. It seemed to kind of come back a little bit, but it kind of ebbs and flows. Do you follow that pattern or do you just stay consistent?
Yeah, you want to be consistent. There are certain, I talk about permanent fashion, not fleeting fashion. Every 6 months, there's a new designer that comes out and says, oh, we're wearing the Mad Men look today. Well, that doesn't work for everybody. If you're a big guy, if you're a weightlifter, if you're over 200 pounds, the Mad Men look doesn't work for you. So it's really about dressing for you, your body type, your height, your weight, your color, making sure the things that work for you are not going to work for everybody else. And I think that's the mistake a lot of guys make is I had one client, I walked in his closet, he's got three distinct, he's got Brooks Brothers, he had Armani, and he had, Tommy Bahama. And I looked at him and I said, Dion, what are you doing? He said, oh, that's my last three girlfriends. Right? So, yeah. You need to dress for your style, and if you don't have a style, we create a style. I can help you create a style because men inherently know, they have an instinct. When they see something, they know they like it, but most guys are leading lives of quiet desperation. They don't want to rock the boat, so they want to be safe. They want to go out and get the navy blazer, the white shirt, the khaki pants, because like one of my clients said, he's like a squirrel. Every year he goes out to gather his nuts. He kind of looks at, okay, what are the nuts the other squirrels are gathering? Okay, those look good. Take them back to my tree, and I'm good for the next year.
Right.
And then, but he sees a guy walking down the street wearing something like I'm wearing, and they're like, wow, I wish I could put that together. Well, you can. You really do know. But so all I do is use my gift, talents, and abilities to help bridge that gap to where they really want to be.
Right. What do you think are some of the biggest mistakes that people are making, executives in particular, but business owners, executives, in dressing themselves?
Right. The first thing is not using their image as a strategic asset. They have to understand that even the most successful executives can be less effective because of their first impression and the image that they project. The second thing would be their personal brand is not consistent with their corporate brand. And the third thing is being sold and not being educated. One of the things that I hear most about when I meet somebody new, I said, Mark, I've learned more about clothing in the last 5 minutes than I had in the last 5 years. And what I do is I educate my clients. So now not only they know why they're wearing what they're wearing. They're not just buying clothes, because the worst thing you can do is you buy clothes, you bring it home, you're like, oh, why did I buy this? Then it sits in your closet, and the most expensive clothes you have are the ones you've bought and don't wear. So if you're strategic about it and you know what to place because of the colors that work for you, so that jacket right there works, is a great color for you because of your hair, then anything we add 2 years from now, because it works for you when you're a color, will go with all the shirts that we picked out. So it's a very strategic approach.
Right.
But that's some of the biggest mistakes a lot of executives make, and not paying attention to the details.
What's the thing about your business that you enjoy the most?
I love not only putting things together, but I love the way my clients feel. When I see them, when I get an email, when I'm done with a client and they walk in the office for the first time, I'll get an email from him saying, Mark, I've never received so many compliments in my career. Thank you very much for all your consulting. That's really the most rewarding for me is the finished product, and that I was able to use something that I love to do to help somebody else achieve their goals.
We talk about branding in a business sense and in a personal sense. When you're branding your business, how much does your look need to correspond with that?
It's huge. It's really everything, because you, especially for individuals, you're a personal brand. So everything that you do, everything that you say, when people see you, first impressions, in the first 5 to 7 seconds, they're determining social status, career competence, can I trust this person, there's so many things that when they first see you, if that first impression is not accurate, it takes anywhere from 3 to 5 business meetings, face-to-face meetings, to change that first impression. So it's the first impression is critical.
I'm going to put myself on the hook here for a minute, and this is taking a real chance. But so my branding, my business is called Renegade Concepts. Mm-hmm. The theme and the tagline of that business is breaking the rules of conventional thinking. So my choice in dress up to this point has been to defy the conventional business norm. So as you notice, I wear jeans. I got a funky pair of boots that I kind of throw with the deal. I dress as what I would quote, a renegade. Do you think, I know we've only met for a few minutes here, but is my messaging clear, or am I off the business track and I need a better path?
No, I think you're perfect, because I see the little bit of the tat, right, the body ink.
Can you say that perfect part again? My wife might be listening.
I was looking at, like the little tat you got hanging out on your sleeve, and I think, one of the things that you worked for Apple, and Steve Jobs was a renegade. Apple's a renegade company. Mm-hmm. He played that role perfectly. He always wore black. Black's a renegade color. Mm-hmm. And not only that, is he never wore buttons. He didn't have any buttons. He hated buttons, so he never wore anything with buttons. That was really branding. It was epitome of branding. And no, I think you do a great job.
I love that. Thank you.
You just pat on your back. You feel better today.
I didn't know. I was thinking I could have gotten slammed on that one. I didn't know how it was going to go.
It was the boots that put me over the edge. When I saw the boots, I said it was perfect.
All right, so. So, Mark, let's say that somebody hires you as their clothier consultant. What's the process they go through? What's the first thing that happens?
The first thing is we have to meet. I've got to find out everything about you. I want you to know about me, how I work, how I operate. We may not be right for each other. I'm not right for everybody. So I find out what you do for a career, what you do personally. Is your wife involved? What do you do socially? I want to find out everything about you. And then one question I ask somebody, if you were to walk into a room of your peers, and you knew nobody, without saying one word, what do you want people to think of you? What are the adjectives that you want people to think of you based on your appearance? And that's exactly what I do. We put colors and patterns together that are in your wheelhouse that will project that image. The second step is we'll go to your home, we'll look through your closet, and we'll find out what's working, what's not working, and meet with anybody else that's involved in your wardrobe decisions, get their input. And then the third step is actually I come back with clothing that I picked out, and we do the dressing by the numbers where everything's numbered and coded. And for people that are colorblind, all my numbers are in black and white, so everybody can see the primary colors in black and white. Then we actually put the wardrobe together, and then we create a plan over the next year, very strategic, of what we're going to add, and we fill in the most important gaps, at that time.
in terms of what you need to buy and what needs to be added
what
to the wardrobe.
What needs to be added. So typically anything that we take out that's not working for you from a color standpoint, or it's dated, or it makes you look too heavy, or it makes you look too old, or it's not sending the message you want to send, we get rid of that. Then I donate it to a ministry here. I give you a receipt so you can write that off on your taxes. Then we fill those gaps in with exactly what you need based on your color and proportion.
Perfect. And going through closets must be a blast.
It's interesting.
You got to give me some dirt.
What's
the funniest thing that you found in somebody's closet?
It's interesting.
I mean, we'll keep it PG here. But
you know, probably the pink tuxedo. As I saw, you know, the guy had, he still had the ruffles and the whole, you know, and I said, you know, it really has to go, you know, unless you just want to keep it for, you know, Halloween or something.
Right.
I think my friend, my son's friend found that and wore it to prom last year.
There you go.
Yeah. You know, guys' closets, I'll go in there and I think my record to date is I threw away 78 ties.
Wow.
Out of one guy's closet. He's had him in there since, you know, college.
Well, see, the thing is, it all comes back around, right?
It does.
That's what goes through in our brain is like, look, man, this is in the 80s. It's coming back.
That's right.
And it's been back already, and it's going to come again.
Parachute pants, Mark, make there it come back.
Yeah. Yeah, the last member, right? The members only, Jack.
Members only.
Parachute pants and members only. New. That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
We're all dating ourselves. So, in your business, are you working primarily with executives? Are you going in with companies and helping their whole executive team? Or how is it working?
Yeah, both. Primarily, I start with the executive, either the business owner or the CEO, and then it kind of filters down to their executive team, their management team. And then I also work with partners to come in, whether it's branding or whatever we need to do to send the message that they want to send.
If you're going in, And this is a question for both of you guys. If you're going in and you're meeting or you're going into a networking type of a situation, so number one, from a branding standpoint, before you even open your mouth, on the dress side, what do you want those clothes to say about you?
Whatever the message you want to send. Is it competence? Is it professional? Is it success? Is it fun? Is it performance? Whatever message you want to send, that's what your clothing needs to convey. Without, it's the nonverbal communication. A lot of guys, I say this to a lot of salespeople as well, you could actually walk in and be a dead man walking because your first impression is so bad, they've already made the decision you're not even going to buy anything before they even open their mouth.
Right.
And that's the scary part. So you want to stack all the cards in your favor so you make the first cut, or your first impression is so good, they're like, wow, I really can't wait to see what this person has to say.
So you get past the first cut and you get into opening your mouth, and what do you need to be, how do you need to get across your brand in that elevator speech? You got 30 seconds to kind of make that first impression. What do you need to have in that information?
Again, I think you need to be really clear on what you are, who you are. Talk about, and I said those in the present tense, not what you did or where you worked. You know, those are experiences, but that doesn't mean that you are those things. So you need to talk about in terms of who you are. And the experiences, those fill in the gaps later and give examples and stories that support who you are. But I think you need to be very clear on who you are.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. So, Mark, pearl of wisdom for our listeners.
Yeah, the pearl of wisdom is what I said before. You know, as a business professional, you represent a brand, which is yourself. And how you look, talk, walk, and act reflects that brand. So if you are not sending that message, if you don't look like a leader with whom someone would want to do business with, then you need to give me a call.
And your contact information?
My contact information, my email address is M as in Mark, B as in Boy, F as in Frank, at dresstheman.com. Website is dresstheman.com or dressingtheman.com. Both will work. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook.
Perfect. And one last question, Mark. Do you have wives that ever hire you for their husbands?
I do. I do. A lot of wives will primarily drive what their husband, you know, buys. And there's been a lot of things that they would love them. For example, you would look great in a pink shirt. Not that you would wear it, but you could wear it. And your wife might have been wanting you to wear a pink shirt for the last 5 years. So all I do as, you know, a heterosexual guy that has more shoes than my wife, I give you permission to wear that pink shirt and say, John, it's okay.
The professional told me to wear it, right?
Right.
You can blame it on you.
That's right.
I do that all the time. Excellent. Well, We appreciate your time, guys. Thanks for coming in and spending some time with us this morning.
Thank you.
We appreciate the listeners taking some time out in their morning. Until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation.